listening to the New Mamas Podcast. Hello, everyone. I am fascinated by the topic of trad wives, a movement that has taken social media by storm. If you don't know what a trad wife is, well, don't worry. I have Joe. Is it Piazza?
It's Piazza. Piazza.
It's Piazza. Yeah. Good. Okay. Mm-hmm. I have Italian. I'm a quarter Italian. So that's where I got a little bit of that. My middle name is Nocito. It's Nocito, named after my Italian family. Anyway,
I like that. What does that translate as? Is that little nut?
Maybe that's a good. You probably know more Italian than I do. So yeah, I'm Italian, Asian, Portuguese, and Brazilian. So I have like a whole little trifecta.
A whole trifecta
in there. With a lot of family lore. So that's why I am interested in the Sicilian inheritance because of that. Because I'm like, ooh, I feel like my crazy ass family deserves some love.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, the Sicilian inheritance is the best book I've ever written. And it is about, I mean, it's loosely based on my crazy ass family, but everyone has a crazy ass family.
So good.
So, like, I mean, there's just so many stories that
so
you
good.
Go through. Yeah.
So good. Everyone, I'm kind of fangirling a bit because I've been listening to Joe's podcast for years
now. Oh my gosh, stop. That makes me so happy. I love that.
Okay, good. My first friend, so I'm in the mommy blogger. I hate saying mommy blogger.
I hate that word. I hate it. I hate it almost as much as I hate mompreneur.
Oh, yeah. Yep, I'm there. So I'm in the mom blogger space. Wasn't always there. Started off as a travel and food blogger, whatever. Migrated to like when I had kids and settled down and bought a farm into mom blogging. But a friend sent me your podcast episode. I think it was a series you did on The More Perfect Mother.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just found it fascinating because I think it was something that you said about how like in a lot of these women are raised in the Mormon community to be homemakers, and their church says take to the blogs to spread the good message. And it's just very I see the dotted lines of how trad wife-ism is very interesting to you and why you took an interest to that, because it is all connected. So Joe is the international best-selling author of The Sicilian Inheritance and hosts the top podcast that you already heard me mention, Under the Influence, and is a mom of three living in the Philly area.
I am. Three feral children, all under the age of seven.
You're in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So before I start, I want to talk about pooping.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of my favorite topics.
Okay,
I mean,
good.
Yeah, when you have kids my kids' ages, like, all you talk about is poop here.
Perfect. So the reason why I want to talk about pooping is because in an episode I heard you on recently, you wondering why does your four-year-old want to stare at you or wants you to stare at them while they poop?
Both of those things. Yeah.
And I have an answer for you.
Tell me.
I think. So with dogs, so I'm big into dog rescue. I have three feral dogs. I mean, they're kind of house trained now. But for dogs, wild dogs will stare at you while they poop because it is the most vulnerable position they can be in. So they want to know that they are being protected by their pack while they're pooping.
Oh, this is so interesting.
Yeah. So do you think that, because children are probably closest to our like roots.
My children are very close to wild dogs, 100%. Yeah.
That's probably why they all, I mean, my son does the same thing. My son's 3.5 and he's always like wants me in the bathroom. And I'm like, no.
Desperate. I mean, it's like they want me in the bathroom with them to talk to them and to hold their hands while they poop. But then when I'm going to the bathroom, I'm like, you're going to give mommy privacy, right? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. Totally. Yeah. And then like, a minute later, they're just creeping in. And it's not even that they're just in the bathroom. Like my four-year-old is dead eye staring at me, just like she's going to kill me or something while I'm trying to go to the bathroom. And, people tell me I'll miss these days at some point. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I'll miss some things, but not
I'll miss
that.
Some things, but not that.
So I'm fascinated by the topic of trad wives for so many reasons, and I have so many thoughts, some of them conflicting, So for example, I'm a working mom. I love that I can get Botox and hire cleaners without having to ask my husband for permission. However, I also find myself in decision paralysis and have definitely yelled at my husband about not wanting to manage everything. I'm sure a lot of mamas listening can relate with that. And I would love for my husband to take the lead sometimes. So am I fascinated by the topic of trad wives? Because maybe in some alternate universe, I envy their lifestyle.
Yeah. I've written a lot about trad wives. And I think it's important to start the conversation out with, what is a trad wife on social media? What does the hashtag trad wife mean? And first and foremost, it's not a stay-at-home mom. While some trad wives may be stay-at-home moms, the majority of stay-at-home moms are not trad wives. It's like the square rectangle analogy. Trad wives are very specifically performing for social media with claims that they submit to their husbands. They submit to very quote-unquote traditional gender roles where the man is the breadwinner. He provides all of the financial support. Women stay in the home. They have no agency over family decisions. It's very different than, say, the stay-at-home mother who is taking a career pause or an indefinite pause, but who is really the CEO of their household, who has agency over their lives, over the family's money. Different things entirely. There's also a lot of very conservative values in tradwife lifestyle, conservative and Christian values. And a lot of these really are mostly about stripping agency from women. So I like to make that clarification because a lot of stay-at-home moms think that I'm being condescending to them, and I'm not. I think stay-at-home mom is the hardest job in the world, and you should be paid all of the money for doing it. My concern is always when the choice is made to completely depend on a man, because the man could up and disappear tomorrow, and then you're going to be stuck without any support and no skills and no career.
Even if that, like, and that is obviously a worst case scenario that does happen.
I think it
happens a lot, but I still feel like even in a healthy relationship, it's great to have your own bank account. I know that a lot of victims of domestic abuse, again, jumping to like the worst case scenario, one of the things that keeps them from leaving is that financial independence.
Yep, absolutely. And I think everyone should have their own bank account. If women are choosing to work in the home, to be the primary person raising their children, managing their household, have your own bank account. If your husband is making all of the money, have them put money into the bank account. It's yours. He gets no decisions about it. You have your own retirement fund. Like this is just, these are very simple things. And I don't think that should be controversial at all. I have written a story about what we can learn from trad wives about what we want out of our marriages and partnerships. And I think if you are in a relationship where you're desperately trying to achieve equality, where you're trying to make sure that everyone is sharing the household labor, where you're trying to make sure that your husband isn't coming into your bedroom while you're recording a podcast, like he did right this second. I love you. You're handsome. Love you. Thank you for that. Don't take a shower right now. Anyway, so when, and you're also working outside the home, I personally feel like I'm juggling 15 fucking jobs in addition to being a mom and sometimes being a halfway decent wife. What is attractive about this trad wife lifestyle that I don't even know if it really exists, but it exists on social media, is it seems like the roles are defined. Great, you do this and I'll do this. The biggest friction in my marriage comes because we're trying to figure out who does what. And that is exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love it. I would love for these roles to just be better defined. And in a trad marriage, it does seem like, okay, you're the breadwinner and my domain is the household. Your domain is finances and my domain is laundry. And is there something attractive about having someone tell you what to do? Yeah, there fucking is. I mean, there's that great line in Fleabag where she says, I just want someone to tell me what to do. I just want someone to tell me what to do. I think we all do.
Yeah. And I think a lot of high-powered careers, I think do want to come home. And I think this is why the trad wife trend is so fascinating and maybe so attractive. a lot of women do want to come home and kind of have like the plan written out for them in a bit, or just like you said, the roles be defined, because we are like, we're making decisions all day in our career.
All day long.
Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to not also have to decide what to make for dinner. Like, I know that's, but that's like the biggest question in our house. It's like the dreaded question. What do you want for dinner?
What do you want for dinner? What do you want? I don't know. I don't want anything. I want someone else to decide. I do. Yes.
Fascinating. Well,
I think a lot of us have decision fatigue too.
Yeah. Maybe that's the right word. Yeah.
And you know, I was just reading a lot of comments. I was on another podcast, The Mom Room, talking about this very thing. And so many of the comments are just coming after me with fucking daggers saying, well, if I just want to garden and cook, that's my right. Didn't you fight for feminism to be able to have choices? And I'm like, cool, garden and cook, do it. All I'm saying is don't give up your own money and be submissive to a man. Why is that crazy? I like to cook. Actually, I don't. That's a lie. I don't like to cook. I try not to cook. I don't even really like to garden. Like the things that I see tradwives doing in their reels, I don't really want to do. I also don't want to be with my kids all day. And I don't think it's controversial to say that. I'm a better mom when I'm not with them 24/7.
Oh, man. See, I'm cosplaying as a stay-at-home mom right now because I am on maternity leave with a 3-month-old. And
God bless you.
It's sweet. I have my postpartum doula downstairs watching her.
I love that for you.
Thank you. But cosplaying as a stay-at-home mom, and like, even if I were to take it a step further and maybe even bring it down to like some of the trad white, like, I know that I think the reason why this trend is getting such a visceral reaction from people is sort of the more extreme things we're seeing, like verbiage, like I proudly submit to my husband or proudly owned by my husband. I don't know, was that you posted that or someone else posted that?
That is something that these trad wives say, proudly submit to my husband, proudly owned by my husband. And that is what I find very, very difficult.
Yeah. Or like not leaving the house or going to the gym. Because that was my idea. I was like, do trad wives not wear like yoga pants and like go to the grocery store or like, I don't know. But know what this actually reminds me of? And this might feel familiar to you. So my family's Portuguese. And when we went to Portugal when I was young, maybe I was 9, I'll never forget that, like having my mom drive instead of my dad got like whiplash looks because women just didn't drive because it was a very machismo culture. And I found that, so I spent a summer in Italy. I found the same thing was it was a very machismo culture. And there was almost like this, but women also didn't submit. I remember now my aunts, women didn't really submit to their husbands. It was just, it's different. It's different because this idea of like traditional gender roles is not new. And that's not what we're saying.
No.
It's just the glamorizing of it that can be harmful.
It's the glamorizing and it's the stripping away of women's rights that also really concerns me. I mean, we're living in a political environment and I don't really want to get too political these days because I say all the time, I'm frankly a girl without a party. I think that the majority of politicians are screwing up the world generally, right? But we are living in a world where women are seeing their rights stripped away constantly right now. And I see the tradwife trend as a very slippery slope of just taking more and more agency away from women. And it's also dangerous because it looks so aspirational and it looks so beautiful in pictures on social media. And I think if you're a woman of a certain age, if you're a grown up, you can see these pictures and see them for what they are. They're very performative. If you're a 19-year-old woman who's, you know, just trying to figure out what to do with her life, this looks nice. This looks like a good option. And that is what is concerning to me. I feel like it is indoctrinating a generation of young women into the idea that you shouldn't have agency over your own lives.
Interesting. And I feel like I was going to ask what your biggest bone to pick with the tradwife movement was. And it sounds like it's that.
That's it. That really is it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I have a daughter.
How old is your daughter?
Only 3 months old. So
she's 3 months.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And then my son is 3.5. But I guess I wouldn't want either child to see this on social media. So my husband's a middle school teacher. He has a very interesting perspective because it seems like culture really is defined by what is on TikTok versus, and I hear this, I hear you say this all the time, like the eyeballs on the little screens are way more than anything on any movie or any big screen production anymore, television shows. And I think that's what's harmful is like, say you're a 12-year-old girl, like, and you don't know what you want to do for the rest of your life, which is most 12-year-olds.
Which is all 12-year-olds, which is just, like, yeah.
Yeah. Like having, glamorizing this lifestyle, like, it's.
That's why I think it's dangerous. I do.
Yeah.
Because there are more eyeballs on TikTok and on these screens than there are on the majority of TV shows, certainly not reading books these days. And so when it is glamorizing these kinds of ideas, you know, it's saying, why would you bother to get a job? Why would you bother to get an education? You could be taken care of in this beautiful lifestyle. Well, let's be honest. It is really hard for anyone to survive on one income in this country. We don't live in a country that supports families, women, or mothers. And so a lot of this really is a fantasy. And I think a lot of these creators, a lot of it is smoke and mirrors these days too. So I don't even know who's a real trad wife and who's a trad wife that's trying to get clicks and trying
to... Who's cosplaying?
Who's cosplaying? Totally. I'm like, ah, damn it. Could I just cosplay to sell some more Sicilian inheritances? Because I'll do it. I'm not above that. It's capitalism at its best, baby.
The freedom. I mean, it's funny because my doula and I were talking about Gwen the Milkmaid. She's one of the trad wives on there. And she posted something with like her backyard in it. And we were like zooming in to see like, where does she live? And it looks like she lives in the burbs, like in the, yeah, with a tiny yard. And I'm like, hold up. You're not milking your chickens.
You're not milking those chickens over there. Yeah. No, you're not.
Who, Lex De La Rosa, I think you did it. Did you do an article with her or you interviewed her?
I did. I interviewed her. Yeah. And, you know, Lex, here's my thoughts on Lex. I liked her a lot. She was on Under the Influence, the podcast. And
she's funny.
She's funny. Do I think that she is staying at home right now? Yes. She has, her kids are too young to really be homeschooling them, by the way. They're like both under three. So the homeschooling thing is a bullshit hashtag. Do I think that her husband is the primary breadwinner right now? Yes, because I think childcare is expensive. I don't think she's necessarily doing it because she adheres to these traditional values. I think that she realized this is a niche that the internet likes, and she gets a lot more attention and a lot more money when she performs, when she cosplays trad wifery.
Yeah, and I think it's, again, like you said, a slippery slope, because do real trad wives earn money? I don't think so.
No, they don't. They don't. Yeah. No. And that's, I mean, I just put a Substack out about that today. Real trad wives aren't making money. And so, yeah, the whole thing, there's a massive amount of irony. If you are a content creator putting out content about being a trad wife, you could be making a shit ton of money, which goes against the tradwife ideals of your husband being the sole breadwinner in the family.
Right. So that's what, but again, like you said, adults like us can kind of read between the lines, especially adults like us who are in the creator space, because we know how intense it is to even just shoot one piece of content. It's a lot.
It's so much work. It's so much work. Yes.
Yeah. And these algorithms demand you post multiple times a day if you really want to get big, as they say. So these women that are trad wives, I think they're really stay-at-home moms who have found a way to just make money off of a niche that's different than your typical mom creator.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's true. I do think that there are some women who genuinely believe this, but I do think at this point they're kind of few and far between. But I do also know that there are a lot of, you know, quote unquote, traditional accounts that are being boosted by conservative forces in this country, by conservative think tanks and conservative lobbying groups. And every time I say that, I sound like a conspiracy theorist, but it's true. And I had a long talk with Emily in Your Phone, who's a political creator and also, you know, has worked with so many politicians over the years. We know that these accounts that kind of push this beautiful ideal of a woman staying at home and giving up her agency, are being boosted by conservative parties in this country. So there's a reason that you see so much more of that than you do of a lot of other things in your feed.
I did want to ask you about that. So do you think they're getting ready to be politically active in this year's election?
No, I think that this is soft political action is what I think. You know, it is very good marketing for the traditional lifestyle. There are a couple of trad accounts that I do believe either the husband or the wife will eventually go into politics. I would not be surprised at all if Ballerina Farm's husband was running for office at some point, if Hannah Nealman's husband was running for office. I also wouldn't be surprised if Brooke Ray Bold's husband, who I think is already in politics, ran for office at some point.
Interesting. Interesting. And what do you think the Conservative Party has to gain off of more women, less women in the workforce?
I mean, honestly, it's less women having decision-making power, because when we have women in office, it has been proven, even when those women are Republican, for the most part, there are outliers. But women do tend to vote for things that take care of people, that take care of women and children and families. And honestly, the Conservative Party in this country is very against those kinds of programs.
Some people say that women entering the workforce is the reason why life is so expensive today and why we need a two-income household to survive. I don't know if you've seen that rhetoric.
I have not seen that rhetoric. That's crazy pants.
That's in my trad wife research.
Wow.
I think I found some like some conservative male accounts that were saying that, you know, when in the 50s, when women started to enter the workforce, like this wasn't supposed to happen, but it did because of the war. And when they did, salaries got lower, which makes it harder to survive in. Say, I don't believe this guy. I'm just repeating what I heard. Do you believe in that rhetoric? What do you think about
that? No, I don't think there's any facts whatsoever to back that up. I don't think that women entering the workforce diluted salaries at all, because there's still the same number of jobs. In fact, there's more jobs than there ever were before. I mean, it really is a way to keep women out of the workforce. And these arguments are not just to keep women out of politics, but they are to keep women submissive and in the home, and to strip them of their agency. You know, A Handmaid's Tale was supposed to be science fiction, but we're so much closer to it, I think, than a lot of us realize. And the trad wife accounts are really, you know, just showing us that there are factions of this country that are longing to go in that direction.
Great book. I mean, I know it's a great series too on Hulu, but also a great book. I read it a couple of years ago, before a lot of the big decisions that were made here in America. I actually read it while I was overseas. I mean, that's what I found so interesting, is that it was supposed to be science fiction, and it was written in like way before. It was written a while, right? In the 80s, early 80s, or
it was. Yeah. It was written in the 80s, maybe even the 70s, but I think the 80s.
It was. And it was just interesting how she just kind of predicted a lot of the things, or not predicted. Well, maybe she was a soft prediction. Maybe she was a conspiracy theorist and we don't know. I think she's still at Margaret Atwood. She's still very much alive.
And she's still she was a consultant on the TV show. She's still publishing books, you know, like every 6 months.
Talk about a badass.
I mean, I just want to be Margaret Atwood when I grow up. That's my goal. Just be Margaret Atwood.
I took a few classes. I used to be part of MasterClass. Have you ever seen?
Oh, I have. Yeah, of course.
He taught a course on writing. And I think I took a couple of the first. This is when I was really into blogging. And I was like, ooh, I want to be a better writer. Mm. And I took a couple classes. And she was just brilliant. Like, even she gave the example of, you know, Little Red Riding Hood, and how, like, if you start a story with there was a little girl walking down the path and then she saw some berries and some bushes, it's kind of loses you and it's kind of boring. And then she's like, what if you start the story with it was dark inside the wolf?
Yeah,
all of a sudden, like, it catches you.
Well, I mean, it's the White Lotus thing. Start with a dead body. People are going to keep watching. Keep listening, keep reading. And Sicilian Inheritance starts with a murder. And yeah.
Yeah, you said it's White Lotus / Murders in a Building.
Yeah, well, it was because we're also doing a companion podcast where I solve my great-great-grandmother's murder in real life, which is why I'm going to Sicily on Monday. But yeah, I mean, it's White Lotus meets Only Murders in the Building meets Finding Your Roots. It's a lot, but it's also fun. Part of the reason I wrote it is in reaction to, you know, so many of the just disturbing things that have been happening in the world. And I read a lot. I read probably about 2 books a week, and I read great books, but a lot of them are very depressing. And I just wanted to write a book that was fucking fun. And The Sicilian Inheritance is just fun. It's got the right amount of like, oh my gosh, let's take down the patriarchy and like women's ambition and good things. But also it's just like food and sex and wine in Sicily on beaches.
You get down with that.
Right? It's like, oh, do you like food? Do you like wine? Do you like sex and beaches? You will like this book.
Oh, I had a question for you. Is there going to be an audio version?
There's an audio version. Yeah. We have great... I auditioned the actresses. There's 2 actresses that are doing the roles, and it's beautiful. I've listened to most of it now, and yeah, there's an audio version that people can order right now.
My postpartum doula and I were talking about that. We're like, ooh, we wonder if there's going to be an audio version. Be fun to listen to it together.
Yes.
So, have you read any smutty fairy novels? We're going really beyond treadwifeism.
I like to go everywhere. Is what I like to do. I read A Court of Roses and Thorns. I started it. I haven't finished it yet. And I really like fantasy. I really like fantasy books and science fiction. And maybe I'm not in the place to love them enough right now. My thing with A Court of Roses and Thorns is it felt very much like the Beauty and Beast and the Beast story, or at least the beginning of it did. And as a mother of 2 daughters, I'm very anti the Beauty and the Beast story right now, where a woman is held prisoner in a powerful man's house and she hopes that she can change him, but he's verbally and emotionally abusive to her. And that really is the hallmark of Beauty and the Beast. She's like, I can change him if I just wait around long enough. And then she does. And it's a shit lesson to teach our daughters. And that felt like the beginning of A Court of Roses and Thorns to me. So I haven't finished it yet.
I'm going to deviate for a second because you brought up Beauty and the Beast. Listen, I've always had a problem with these Disney movies. A Little Mermaid.
Massively problematic, except for the fact that King Triton is like real hot. So hot.
I always thought Jafar was kind of hot. Like, if we're talking about Disney guys that are hot, I mean, he's like got that like bad guy, like,
bad guy like, thing, bad guy jam. Totally.
Anyway, I will say the first book of ACOTAR series, it was trash. I will say I hate Reddit, and I'm a huge fantasy fangirly. I am one of those smutty fairy girl lovers.
I like smut. I mean, I do enjoy smut, even though it's weird because in real life I like vanilla sex. I'm writing an essay right now for Cup of Joe about how in real life I like vanilla sex. So how do I write sex scenes?
Interesting. Yeah. I always actually wondered like how, anyway.
I want to know how smutty writers have sex in real life. That's something I'm desperate to know.
I want to know how, like, do they watch porn?
Do they watch
like,
porn? Yeah.
Like, because some of the stuff that she writes, shout out Sarah J. Maas, is really creative. Like, I'm reading, I'm like, oh.
So are you telling me I need to get past the first book? Because yes. I have so many friends that love this series, but can I read the second book without finishing the first book?
Fast forward to the end. If you could read like the end of ACOTAR and then start on the second book. Because I don't really love the character of Feyre. You would probably enjoy Throne of Glass much better. It is an 8 book series. It is long, but it is much better. The main character, Aelin, is way more like, she's more like Mulan, right? Like, if we're talking like Disney movie.
Yeah, if we're talking about Disney, yeah. Mm-hmm.
If we're like aligning it with that, like Throne of Glass, it's really young adult. There's no sex. But I love Throne of Glass. But anyway, wow, guys. But everyone, my audience knows I love ACOTAR. I'm always talking about it.
Then you're the perfect person to tell me if I should keep going, because I'll keep going. Maybe that was just my, I had watched Beauty and the Beast like 5 times, by the way, like in that 1 week, because my one daughter loves it.
You were triggered.
I was triggered that week. So I'll give it another try.
Yeah, it's a. It, I hate Reddit. Like, I read it because one of my girlfriends saw it at the airport and she's like, if you love fantasy, it seems like this is right up your alley. Everyone's talking about it. So I was like, okay, let me read it. And I kept texting her the whole time, what does everyone like this book? Because I grew up on Anne Rice. Like, I don't know if you've ever read any Anne
Love, love.
Rice.
I love Anne Rice. I also, you know who I loved growing up so much? I loved Christopher Pike.
Oh, I've never read him.
Oh my God. It's like YA horror novels.
That's probably why I didn't. I'm not a big
Yeah,
horror girly.
they, I mean, they were horror. And then I loved Anne Rice, but then I also loved the Flowers in the Attic, Petals in the Wind series. So, I mean, I like smut. I do. I'm like here for
Yeah.
all of the smut. I think I just, yeah, like I said, I think I was triggered by the Beauty and the Beast themes.
Yeah. And Anne Rice was just like delicious. Like, she just,
Yeah.
like, her writing was. I haven't read some, like, her latest stuff, but I read, like, the whole, like, Vampire Lestat, Interview with a Vampire. Like,
Oh, loved those.
I'm
Loved those.
throwing, like,
Yeah.
way back. But I should reread those now that I think, because I
You
wrote.
should reread them. I reread Interview with a Vampire recently because
Oh, yeah.
it was in a hotel that I was at and I'd forgotten my book and it was the, you know, like a paperback is in the hotel and it held up. It was good. It was a good fun read.
You know, I read it when I was like 11,
Same, same.
and
Yeah.
that's so inappropriate now that I think back,
Totally.
because there was so much sex in
So
it.
much sex.
My
So much
parents
sex.
didn't know what I was reading. My parents are
No.
like first
No.
generation. They're immigrants, so they had no, they were just happy I was reading. They didn't care what it
Totally.
was.
Yeah, they're like that's, you know, they have no clue. But I mean, yeah, I read Flowers in the Attic when I was like 11 and that's real inappropriate. It's like brother sister incest.
Oh my.
Oh
Well,
yeah.
Game of Thrones, you
Game of
know.
Thrones, same.
So,
Sames. Yeah. We really went off course, but I will say Beauty and the Beast gave me trad wife vibes. So
Ooh. Which Disney do you think Belle is the closest to Tradwife in all of the Disney like films of our era? I think.
yeah. I mean, I do. I really do. You know, the Disney films are problematic. The early ones, not anymore, but because so many of them just ended with a wedding and said that this is your happily ever after. And I think
Yeah.
that's a dangerous narrative to give anyone, not just young girls. You know, it's dangerous and toxic for young men too, to say, oh, I mean, it's a lot of pressure to tell a young man. You have to make so much money to support an entire family. Like I said, it's almost impossible to support a family on one income these days.
Yeah.
And so to tell a young man, this is what you have to do, that's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of toxic messaging for those boys.
And I think not all, obviously, as not all women are built for homemaking, not all men are built for that either. Like, my husband is a musician, he's an artist, but he was brought up in a very traditional, his dad was a businessman. I think his dad had wished he had birthed a finance bro, but my husband is not that. He's like the opposite. So it's and I know that financial pressure, like, it's tied in with like his masculinity because of, you know, all of the societal messaging. So that I think that can be hard. I was going to ask you, what is the biggest criticism you get for talking about trad wives? You said you get a lot of hate comments. Was that, which I'm actually kind of surprised to hear.
I get a lot of hate comments. I can actually pull some up on my phone. Yeah, I mean the hate that I usually get is about that saying that I'm being condescending or nasty to stay-at-home moms and women have fought to have all of the choices and this is their choice. And that's why I'm so sensitive about saying that trad wives are not the same as stay-at-home
Yeah.
moms, because I get told that I'm anti-feminist a lot and it's just not the case. I'm in support of women having agency and having their own finances. That's my biggest thing. I'm like, do you have a bank account? Great. Do you have your own 401k? Amazing. Awesome. Great. Then you can support yourself when your husband leaves you or dies. That's all I care about. It really is.
Women do live longer than men.
We should tell everyone to pre-order The Sicilian Inheritance right now because it is the book of the year.
And do they still get a free subscription to your Substack if they do?
Yes. Yes, until the day The Sicilian Inheritance comes out officially, which is April 2nd, you will get a free lifetime subscription to my Over the Influence Substack. It's like a couple $100 value over 2 years.
Wow.
And we have a free trad wife murder mystery, which I am writing, that is exclusive on the lifetime Substack. So, you know, order the book and you get so many perks out of it. Also, I give away free books on the Substack all the time. So, like, there's a lot of benefits.
All right, you heard it here from Joe herself. Everyone, thanks for listening and stay tuned next week for the next episode. Bye, Joe.
Thanks for joining us this week on the New Mamas Podcast. This podcast was created to help first-time moms everywhere navigate this new stage of life and talk about the honest and the raw moments in motherhood. I'm your host, Lena Forrestal. I'm a working mom by day and a blogger, photographer, and podcaster by mid-afternoon. And as a first-time mom myself, I'm on this journey with you. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And if you did, be sure to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. You can donate to the show at buymeacoffee.com/newmamaspodcast. Stay in touch by following us on Instagram at New Mamas Podcast and Lena Forrestal. Thanks again, and stay tuned next week for the next episode. Bye!